Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Monday. Let's not waste any time. Let's head out to the Circus Sports Guest Hotline and joining us now from the Sporting Tribune, Steve Karp. Steve, how are you?
Good. Long time no speak.
I know. Good to chat with you again. A lot happening in Las Vegas. Wanted to start with this one just because you wrote a great column about it. The skid that the Vegas Golden Knights have been on. Again, thankfully, they just recently defeated the Detroit Red Wings over the weekend. But, Steve, I mean, they went from a team that looked to be in position to defend their Stanley Cup title. Now they are struggling. I mean, if you can put into words, what is happening with this team as we go into a very critical stretch run of the season here?
Well, it's a multifaceted issue. If it was one thing, they would have corrected it. But right now, they have several problems. One, they need to get more scoring from their bottom six. They're not getting that. Two, the defense has to play better in front of whoever is the goal. And three, the goaltending's got to be better. And unless those things sort themselves out in the coming weeks, they're probably making the playoffs regardless. But as far as defending the cup goes, that's going to be a pretty tall order, because if they have to play Colorado or Dallas or even Vancouver in the first round, it's going to be a challenge for them. But I have faith that the moves they made last week are all going to pay off in the end. Certainly, Noah Hanifin has given the defense a big boost. When Tomas Hertl is ready to play in a couple weeks, he gives them strength at center and also improves their power play. You put him with Eichel, Marc Gessault, Petrangelo, Theodore Carlson, whoever, that power play is going to be better. And Anthony Mantha, they put him with Chandler Stephenson as Stephenson at center the other night against Detroit, and that line played much better. And Pavel Dorofeyev scored, really gives that line some good balance. So I think they'll be okay. But, man, it's been a rough stretch. I'll tell you what, with injuries and just guys not performing, the one guy who's been good all the time, Jonathan Marchessault, 35 goals, 3 hat tricks. And you know what's funny? The guy is in his walk year on his contract. He's going to get a lot of bank from whoever wants to pay him, whether it's Vegas or someone else. If he hits the open market July 1st, he's going to be a very rich man.
Steve, hockey is the one sport that you could get into the postseason, get into the playoffs as one of the last seeds, a 7 or 8. We see the Kings do that here in Los Angeles. And I don't know if you have this confidence at all, but, what maybe would make you believe that this team could get into the playoffs as one of the last 2 seeds, but maybe go on a run?
Is Mark Stone coming back?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Because he's a huge part of what they are.
Yeah.
All right, let's assume he can play. Yeah, I think they could go on a run. It will all come down to what it did last year. A goaltender getting hot. Aiden Hill, if you remember, came in during the Edmonton series after Laurent Brossoit got hurt, and he carried him to the cup.
Yeah.
Now, can Logan Thompson do that? Can he get his form back and get his game back to where it was, you know, a year and a half ago when he was an all-star? I don't know. Maybe. You never know how guys respond to playoff pressure. Aiden Hill did last year. Perhaps he could do it again this year. But that would be my biggest concern about them making a deep run. Is the goaltending going to be good enough? But, you know, getting Stone back, maybe getting Will Carrier back to play on that fourth line with Nick Waugh, Patrick, and Keegan Colson. I mean, they got to get their game back to where it was early in the year. Remember, they were an 11-0-1 to start the year. Now they've been a 500 hockey team, 23-23-7. So a lot has changed. And again, it seems like every year we're having the same discussion. Injuries, long-term injured reserve, manipulating the cap or whatever. And, you know, it's become the regular thing with this team.
The Oakland A's unveiled new renderings for their stadium, and you wrote an amazing column about that in the Sporting Tribune. Again, they coincided it in terms of timing with the big league weekend that they've had here. Nice crowd, historically speaking, that's not new. All right, a lot of comparisons to the Sydney Opera House, a lot of talk about what the heck is this thing. Steve, your initial thoughts when you saw the new drawings or new pictures of the stadium?
The renderings are beautiful.
Okay.
Although I didn't see any lights, so unless they want to go like retro Wrigley Field in the 1950s or something, they better figure out a place to put lights in this stadium. Okay. All kidding aside, here are my concerns. One, is this thing really going to fit on 9 acres of property?
No.
Two, where is John Fisher coming up with the money to pay for this? He claimed he's got $500 million from the family to invest in the stadium. He still needs investors. That, to me, is a huge red flag. Okay, if you don't have the money to build it yourself and you need other people, I don't care who it is, the Maloofs, Miriam Adelson, MGM, you can name whoever you want.
Yeah.
That's not a good sign. And they still have a lot of other issues. You know, what if the FAA says you can't build this ballpark because it's too high and it interferes with flights going in and out of Harry Reid Airport? What happens if, you know, there's cost overruns? Who's paying for that? I mean, it seems to me like the A's continue to fly by the seat of their pants in this move from Oakland to Las Vegas. There never seems to be any real rhyme or reason or anything to back up what they intend to do. And I guess, as I said, I remain skeptical that this thing ever happens.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing about it is it's been so mismanaged, so poorly planned, and as much as I wonder if Vegas will happen, I just, you know, having been in the state of California, knowing how hard it is to get public financing for sports stadiums in California, don't think it'll happen there. So, I mean, again, they're in a very tough spot. The one thing that has really, I guess, surprised me is that this is the first team that I have not seen the public support in terms of, obviously, they very much support a new team, a expansion team. But something about this, I mean, they could be walking into a new home in Vegas that has been very welcoming and warm to all the sports teams that have come to town. They've been so poorly handled on a variety of fronts. But Steve, from the fan perspective, the team has done nothing to ingratiate themselves with the community, and that's the big concern. Like you're building a 33,000 seat stadium, and there's no one excited about this place at all.
And you know why? It's really simple. The team stinks.
Yeah.
The on the field product is so bad right now. Why would you even want to invest your money and take your family and take your kids to watch this? Because you look at, you look at other teams. Look at Baltimore. They were bad for decades, right?
Yeah.
But they, what did they do? They built through their farm system. They made a few good trades. Suddenly, it's okay to go to Camden Yards again. The team is really good. They're fun to watch. They got all these good young players who are performing. That's how you do it. But the A's, as soon as they get a good player ready to come up to the majors, he's traded because they don't want to have to pay him. All right? So where is John Fisher? Let's assume he comes up with the money for the ballpark, all right, which is right now $1.1 billion. Where is he coming up with the other $170 million to make his payroll competitive enough to compete in what is a very good division with the Astros, with the Rangers, the defending world champs, Seattle, which has shown it's willing to spend money, and obviously the Angels, who did spend money for years. Of course, they let Ohtani leave, but the point is the A's have so much work to do on the field to be competitive.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that ever happened. So why would a person in Vegas have any reason to be excited about this particular Major League Baseball team putting down roots in their city?
One more example of Las Vegas really being a great sports town in terms of their fans supporting the teams. And again, it gets some bad press if it's the Raiders. And again, we knew it's the most expensive ticket in all of professional football where opposing fans come over and take over the stadium. By the way, that happens in Los Angeles as well. But WNBA history happened last week in terms of the Las Vegas Aces selling out their season tickets. And Steve, you covered them, as they went, as they won their back-to-back championships, and you saw the crowd there. Again, a very affordable ticket. You could take your kids there. You could take your family there. Your thoughts on, again, this is the first time in WNBA history a team has sold out of their season tickets.
Here's the funny thing about the Aces. They weren't born in Vegas like the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
They came from San Antonio, which had come from Utah, Salt Lake City. So this is like the third iteration of the franchise, okay? And what Mark Davis did was he committed to winning and staying put. He built a practice facility for the team next door to where the Raiders headquarters are. He gave Becky Hammon $1 million to coach the team. He's hired really smart, strong women like Nikki Vargas and Natalie Williams to help run the team. And they put a great product on the court, and it's a fun experience. You don't have to even be a family person. They what they have done is they have embraced the entire spectrum of this community. And I think that's important because, yeah, everyone wants families to come to the games and have fun. But they also attract the gay and lesbian community. They attract elderly people. They attract a broad spectrum of fans. And of course, it's a fun thing. You go and somebody misses free throws, you get free pizza. they make the game fun. They have all these cool things going on during the game, during timeouts, and there's good energy in the building. To me, the one drawback is, you got to pay to park at Mandalay Bay, and then you got to walk a little bit to get to Michelob Ultra Arena. But that's nitpicking it. The fact is that the Aces can sell out season tickets. Now, granted, the place always seats 12,000. So this isn't, Madison Square Garden or something or whatever. But still, that's a hell of an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And I think the league itself is getting better. The town, Caitlin Clark's going to be coming in. And I think that's going to create more excitement and buzz. Especially when the Fever, assuming they draft, why wouldn't they?
No, yeah.
When they come to play here, it's going to be a lot of fun. She broke Kelsey Plum's college record.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, there might be a little fun there between her and Kay Plum, but the whole thing with the Aces, unlike the Aces, they have shown an ability to win. And that success on the court is translated to support off.
And by the way, 12,000 is like just the perfect number, I think, for the WNBA. I'll just tell you as a Sparks fan since they began playing, you know, playing at the 20,000 seat Crypto.com arena is just too big, you know. And so, like, when they do draw crowds of, you know, 10 to 12,000, which is a good turnout, it looks half empty. So, again, I think 12,000, maybe even 15, that's a perfect number. Steve, you are in the hotbed of college hoops for the next week or so. All the conference tournaments, again, the women's tournaments have already happened, or they're happening. The Pac-12 tournament happened yesterday, USC winning that. What is it about this week? Again, I mean, it's the best place, I think, for the conference tournaments in terms of the number there. And again, I've long believed it's the best place to go watch the first weekend of March Madness. What are you looking forward to? Again, this will be the last Pac-12 men's tournament at T-Mobile Arena. You'll touch on this during the week. I mean, that like opens up T-Mobile for either the Mountain West, or by the way, one of these bigger conferences has to look in Vegas, maybe the Big 12, which is having their football media day in Vegas. Listen, if you're not thinking about Vegas to having your conference tournament, you're probably not doing your job. But Steve, your thoughts on the last, really, again, the last Pac-12 tournament here in Las Vegas?
I'm thinking it didn't have to die.
Yeah,
the patients should still be alive and kicking. And I blame the presidents, and I blame the former commissioner, George Klivikov.
Yeah,
he was asleep at the switch when USC and UCLA were being courted by the Big Ten, and he didn't do enough proactively to keep the Trojans and Bruins in the fold. And I know it's attractive. And by the way, good for USC and UCLA to have the foresight for their programs, seeing what college athletics have become with NIL and transfer portals and stuff. They've made their programs wealthier and also more attractive for recruits to come. And I know as a USC alum, you are thrilled by this move to the Big Ten. But then when the rest of the league started to disintegrate, leaving only Washington State, Oregon State, that was a big, big mistake. And, you know, the greed of the presidents, I wrote about this during the week of the football championship game in Vegas. The presidents really screwed this up. I'm sorry. They had a good offer from ESPN, and they refused to accept it. They thought they were worth more. They weren't. And as a result, all of this indecisiveness caused Arizona, Utah, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, and Arizona State to say, adios, we're out of here. And that's what's going to be sad, Arash. When you and I are sitting there Saturday night in T-Mobile Arena watching, you know, whoever, whether it's Arizona, UCLA, you know, whoever it is, doesn't matter. We're going to be saying to ourselves, this didn't need to be the end. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're a Pac-12 guy. You're a Pac-10 guy.
Yeah.
I mean, and I remember the Pac-8. That's how old I am. So, my God, you know, it really is sad. Now, the question is, you brought up a great point. If you're the Big 12 and you're Brett Yormark, the commissioner, do you look at bringing your basketball tournament to T-Mobile Arena and fill the void with the Pac-12 leaving? Or are you Gloria Alvarez and you're the big the Mountain West commissioner and you say, you know what? My coaches have been bitching and moaning for years about UNLV having a home court edge playing at Thomas to Mack. Why don't we just move down the street to a nicer arena?
Yeah.
And that'll settle the neutrality issue once and for all. You know, I don't know if the Big 12 presidents want to leave like Kansas City. You know, that's about traditional for that time to play hoops there. So I don't know what happens, but I think Brett Yormark is probably looking into it.
It's just a smart guy. Oh, yeah. And I think the only reason I bring it up is because Brett is a visionary. He thinks ahead. He had the foresight, unlike the Pac-12 with the TV deal. I mean, he accepted the deal that he knew that was out there. And he's talking to different like executives, basically saying, this is all we got, Brett. Like, if you want to squeeze a little bit more, you can. But, you know, don't come to the table like can try to get twice as much as this. That's not happening. There's something about Vegas, and I don't need to tell you that. And so I know tradition is tradition, but, you know, if you can bring, you know, your tentpole basketball conference event, and again, what would fill up T-Mobile, and as you know, Steve, before we go to the break, is that no disrespect to the Mountain West, but, like, when you bring, you know, Kansas and signature teams like that, that'll be sold out months in advance. And listen, there will be a conference tournament in T-Mobile, whether that's Mountain West, whether that's Big 12, whether that's someone else. Again, and again, I totally believe that there will be a conference football championship game here as well. Steve, I will see you this week for the Pac-12 men's tournament and all the other tournaments happening out there. Let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll be joined by the Sporting Tribune's Grant Mona. When we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline, 310-400-0340. All right, let's head back out to the Circus Sports Guest Hotline. And joining us now from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Mona. Grant, how are you?
Doing good. Looking forward to more sun in the sky later in the day. So exactly. Ready.
It was a nice final Pac-12 women's tournament for the USC women. That was nice to see. I'll be heading out there Wednesday, bright and early, for USC playing Washington. We'll see how they do. But before we talk a little bit about March Madness, Ty Lue brought up a point yesterday that we've been talking about for quite some time. And again, it's a little bit more frustrating when there's not a solution. This is the Clippers' last game at Crypto.com Arena. And there's so many scheduling quirks because they are third in terms of choosing games and dates. They are behind the Lakers and the Kings. I mean, people kind of forget this. I mean, the Kings... I think the Kings get first selection, actually. So, you know, Kings and Lakers, and then, but what happened to the Clippers this weekend should not happen. You should not be playing two home games in 22 hours, I believe. That is crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back-to-back noon tips. Again, they obviously that affected their performance. Your thoughts on that? Again, as a Clippers fan, as someone who's followed this team for quite some time, this has been a problem that they've had for a while. Doc Rivers has talked about it, but now again they have a solution. This is these are their last games that they have to deal with this. But still, I mean, when you look back at this season or in seasons in the past, and you are, let's just say, for example, the 4 seed instead of the 3 seed because of 2 games, and some of those you could just chalk up to scheduling problems. What were your thoughts about this weekend and what Ty Lue had to say?
I think it's just kind of ridiculous in the aspect of the schedule makers, just because it is actually against league protocol to have two games within 24 hours. And in this case, it was two games in 22 hours. I don't know if they brought that up with the league. I don't know if they will. I don't know what repercussions come from that. I don't think you can really do anything. You can't punish the league. Yeah. But it's just, it's what the Clippers have dealt with for years, it feels like. And the thing, Arash, about it is that they never do well in these matinee games, right? They never do well in these 12:30, 1 p.m. start times historically. And when you have an older team, it's going to be even more difficult. And like you said, when you're fighting for standings, when you're fighting for seeding, especially late in the season, and you have these back-to-backs, and you have back-to-backs where they're both afternoon games, that's just a dagger. It really hurts because the Clippers, they understood what Tuesday's game meant in terms of playing the Timberwolves and gaining standings there. They're going to play the Timberwolves on Tuesday at home. But to have to kind of forfeit a game against the Bucks, that's essentially what they did. They rested Kawhi Leonard. They rested Paul George. And they kind of just said, hey, we're going to give up this one. We're going to win the one on Saturday, which was, again, against the Bulls. That one wasn't easy either because it was another 12:30 start. But that Sunday one against the Bucks, who were at full strength and coming off of a loss, that you can just chalk it up to a scheduled loss. And I got to give the Clippers credit. They actually played very well without their two stars. James Harden played. Bones Highland got a little bit more run. A lot of the bench guys got a little bit more minutes. But in terms of what this means to them, it hurts because now you're 3.5 back of the one seed. You know, you're 2.5 back of the three seed. And it's almost guaranteed that they're a lock to be the four seed, which is not good because the Pelicans are the five seed, which means you're going to have to play the Pelicans in round one, and they're playing excellent basketball too. So it's not ideal, and I just, that's one of the main reasons I think Clipper fans want to be into a dome so bad, is because it's not just that it's modern. It's not just that it's new. It's not just that it's their own home. It's the scheduling. You get to play night games every time you play at home, and, you know, almost every time, I should say. I know they're going to put some Sunday primetime games and stuff like that, but it just allows you to not have these types of issues where you can see your players and your stars on every given night. So you don't have to worry about a matinee game or getting up early or seeing your guys out because it's a 12:30 game. So it's an issue, and they have a few more back-to-backs here for the rest of the season. But, man, I'm so ready to get out of that stadium. And I think Clipper fans share that same sentiment.
So we broke a story here at the Sporting Tribune, right? Like I did, just because I have a few friends in San Diego. Yeah. Big news for the Clippers G League team. And I'm excited about this because I love going down to San Diego, love like an excuse to head down there. The G League Ontario Clippers are going to be moving to San Diego, and they are going to be the San Diego Clippers. Again, that's how they got their name way back in the day. And again, they're going back to their old San Diego Clippers logo. They too, by the way, Grant, are moving into a brand new home, the 7,500 seat Front Wave Arena. Again, perfect size for a G League team. So that'll be open in September. Again, not that you've follow the Ontario Clippers that closely, but your thoughts on that? The San Diego Clippers are coming back.
Thing is, though, Arash, I do follow them pretty closely.
I'm sorry, exactly. I'm sure you do.
So, yeah. Anything Clippers, I follow pretty closely. But the thing about this is, which is crazy, is that I had no idea that they were building a brand new arena in Oceanside. I had no idea that that was even in development. So when I found out about this news via your tweet, I was like, wait a minute, I got to go look this up. And it actually looks like a very cool venue in Oceanside. And especially, like you said, the 7,500, it's very quaint. It's very intimate for, you know, a G League team. I'm so glad that they're going back to San Diego and using the same kind of logo theme. Cause they kind of, they dropped the theme, a logo, which has like the San Diego Clippers theme and the script logo and all that stuff. And it looks very reminiscent of what they used to have. I think that, you know, a lot of San Diego people really still love the Clippers. That's what I've garnered from what I've been talking to people around social media and stuff like that. There's a big San Diego fan base, and obviously so. All they have is the Padres now. And obviously their games are broadcast on Bally Sports San Diego still as well. So, you know, it's really cool for them to go back to San Diego and have their own place too, because they're right now they're using the Toyota Center, I believe it is.
Yeah,
the Toyota Center in Ontario. And that's a very beautiful arena, but I think just having the Clippers roots in San Diego and having a place where fans in San Diego can go watch basketball, like professional basketball, I think that's going to be a really good, I guess, stepping stone to getting more fans to be attracted to the LA Clippers, because a lot of those people in San Diego, they don't really have a basketball team to root for. Of course, you can root for San Diego State. You can root for the college teams, but to have a professional team down there, I think is really cool. And to have it tie back to the roots of old and have the same colors, I believe they're going to have. And with a brand new arena, I think it's a really cool thing. And it just goes to show like what Steve Ballmer has done for that organization, right? He's built a brand new stadium in LA. He's built, I mean, he hasn't built it, but he's investing in that property down in San Diego or Oceanside. So two brand new stadiums within the same time frame. It's just going to be, like we've been saying, a fresh start, not just for the LA Clippers, but for the San Diego Clippers too. And I just think that'll just push a lot of more of that base down there to follow professional basketball a little bit more, which is something that I know that Steve Ballmer wants to tap into as much as he can, because obviously they're trailing the Lakers in almost everything. So they just want to tap into more fan bases, and this is a great start.
It's brilliant because, listen, San Diego, obviously, there's no more Chargers there. The Padres are struggling. And just to really – to kind of, like, go back to your roots, I guess, and say, hey, listen, like, we yes, we're in Los Angeles, but, like, here's, like, an olive branch. Like, we were named for the Clipper ships in San Diego. Come support us. And, again, it's such a convenient drive and a train ride and all that good stuff. So, you know, we'll have to go out there at some point to go see the San Diego Clippers. Wanted to get your thoughts also on the Lakers. Again, it was a big weekend for them in terms of beating the Milwaukee Bucks on Friday, D'Angelo Russell going off for 44 points, and then beating the Timberwolves at home, the first time that they've beaten them this season. We've talked about this, Grant. I mean, we would not be shocked, except for the Denver Nuggets. It's the one thing that we would be shocked if they beat. But this Lakers team can go up against any team in the league, and we really saw that over this weekend. Your thoughts on the big weekend that the Lakers had?
It was such a great weekend for them, especially to win against a full-strength Bucks team without LeBron James. D'Angelo Russell had 44 points. He looked like that number, that first-round draft pick that the Lakers had way back when 2016. I mean, he looked all the part. This is kind of like what they wanted from D'Angelo Russell way back when, and they finally got it. He was essentially the main guy on that Friday game. And he, look at the Bucks. You could say what you want about them. They still have their issues, and it was a typical Doc Rivers game. I'll just put that out there. But for the Lakers, what a resounding win. You have Spencer Dinwiddie come in the last seconds and give you a clutch block. You have D'Angelo Russell go off for 44 points. Felt like he couldn't miss. And you don't have LeBron James for that game against a very, very good Bucks team. So that's a huge win, not just for morale, but for the standings. Obviously, they're chasing a lot of people right now. And of course, on Sunday, you go up against the Timberwolves team without Rudy Gobert, without Karl Anthony Towns. So you, obviously you're going to have an advantage there. But what Anthony Davis did, I have to applaud. I mean, this guy put up the first stat line like that, I think, ever. He had 27 points, 25 rebounds, 7 steals, 3 blocks. He had a lot of assists. Like, that was one of the best Anthony Davis games I've ever seen. And I know that you can say, oh, well, you know, they didn't have Towns, they didn't have Gobert, so it's easier. For him to put up stat lines like that, that just shows you how good he is when he can turn it on. Now, obviously, he has issues when, you know, he isn't that consistent. But if you can see that Anthony Davis in the playoffs against a team like that, I have a lot of confidence in them going forward. And look, I know we were talking about how bad that Kings loss was last week. They play the Kings on Tuesday. They are right in the thick of this 7-10 range now, Arash, yeah, where they can, if they keep rallying, if they finish off this homestand and in this kind of, I guess, tough part of their schedule pretty well, which they have already. They've actually done very well through this tough schedule. If they finish this out and get on a run here going into the playoffs, and I know that it can change from one game to another. I always say this. I always get ahead of myself. But if the Lakers can find this type of these types of performances on a consistent basis going into the play-in or even the playoff, Look, I like them against a lot of teams. I put out a tweet, I think it was last night, where I said they are 9-2 or 9-3 against the Wolves, the Thunder, and the Clippers, which are three of the top four teams. Their only problem is they can't beat Denver and Sacramento. So I don't know what the Sacramento thing is. I understand the Denver one, but if I go through a lot of these matchups, Arash, and I see the Lakers playing the Wolves or Thunder or Clippers in a playoff series, I mean, I might have to lean towards them with how they're playing and the size that they have if they're healthy. So there's still like a good amount of games left. I think people forget about that. Like with the Lakers, things can change very quick. But yeah, with these amount of games left, they have to get momentum going in. They cannot, you know, win one, lose one, win two, lose one. They have to go on a streak here.
Yeah, I mean, so they just to look at these standings here, the Lakers have a 1.5 game lead over the Warriors for that 9-10 spot. So they are the 9th seed right now. But to your point, Grant, just not even in the 7-10. And again, there is such a gap right now between 10 and 11 that I'm not really worried about the Lakers not being in the play-in. But they are two games out of the 6th seed. Again, the significance there is that you're not in the play-in. Yeah, I mean, for the Clippers now, it looks like the Pelicans now have sort of like a two-game lead above the Suns for that 5 seed. It looks like the Clippers might be kind of stuck in that 4 seed. We'll see. Yeah. But to your point, I mean, the matchups are so important. You know, where, you know, if you're a Clippers fan, you don't want the Pelicans. That for whatever reason is their problem with the size. What have you seen, though, from the Lakers during this run? Like, again, no one's expecting D'Angelo to go off for 44 points again. But have you seen certain things, certain lineups that can that they can build upon here?
Yeah, it's weird, Arash, that when some of the lineups that we talk about so much, when they put them out on the floor and we see it in action, it does well. Yeah. Who would have thought, right, that some of these lineups would have worked with Rui and D'Lo and Reeves and LeBron and AD? Those lineups usually tend to work just because they have a lot of size. You have defense and offense. I just think, like, for now, their offense just looks a little bit more crisp. They look a little bit more bouncy. I think, you know, sometimes we say that losses can be a good thing. That loss against the Kings, I know it's really crucial to how they play and what their seeding is and all that. But I think after that Kings game, what I saw from the next two games after that was a team with urgency, a team with bounce, a team with energy, a team that said, we're not going to let that happen anymore. If we get a big lead, we're not relinquishing, we're not giving it up, right? So I think that this Lakers team understands how important every game is now. That Kings loss was very devastating, right? It puts you back a little, it sets you back a little bit, but from how they've responded, I think it was a great thing for them because now they're taking the game seriously for 48 minutes and not just for a half or for a quarter. So, I have seen a little bit more urgency, which is one of the things, and urgency and effort was one of the things that I had concerns about. And when you have that, you know, they play very good basketball and they have good matchups against some of the top teams in the West. So for me, I just like to see it more consistently, because I've said it before, like, this Lakers team has what it takes, but on a game-to-game basis, they don't give forth the effort or the consistency that I'd like to see. So from here on out, I'd like to see them play with that type of urgency, that type of effort, that type of fire that we saw against the Bucks and against, you know, on Sunday against the Wolves.
The big news in the National Football League, Russell Wilson is going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So interesting in terms of, you know, some of the pictures that were taken. I mean, I'm sure he could have taken a private plane there, but I guess he's commercial. We're going to be hearing a lot of big news around the National Football League. Again, Mac Jones also got traded to Jacksonville. I think obviously he'll be more of a backup there. But what are you kind of looking forward to? Again, we're going to see a lot of movement over the next couple days here. Your thoughts on Russell Wilson going to the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, I think it's a great fit for him. And like we've mentioned before, Arash, I mentioned that as one of the destinations, but I think that him with Mike Tomlin, I think that it can be a good pairing. You know, they have George Pickens and Russell Wilson still throws a good go ball. So I think that him and George Pickens can be a really good duo together. Obviously the Steeler fan base is awesome. They've always shown support for the team. They always show up. This is a team that, look, they've been very good over the past decade, right? It's just that they haven't won a championship. They haven't won a Super Bowl in that time span. But, I think that you know, what they got him for, it's a minimum deal. The Broncos are paying him $38 million. Yeah. So the Steelers get him for a minimum deal. He's kind of a bridge quarterback to kind of figure out where you're at. And they're going to be competitive. The Steelers are always competitive with Mike Tomlin. And I think that him, in that system, you know, they have some pieces in there where you can say, okay, this could work. They could be a playoff team. Now, are they a Super Bowl contender? I don't know, because free agency just started and we're going to have to see with the draft, but I like that pairing for him. And I think that for him going to a loyal fan base like that, a historic franchise like that, I think that it's just good for him. And look, free agency just started today. There's a lot of deals already, people being extended. Michael Pittman got extended. DeAndre Swift went to the Bears on a 3-year deal. So that's good for them. There's a lot of movement already, Arash. And I expect this free agency to be one of the most explosive, I think, of all time. It could be that good, especially this first 2 days. We can see a lot of movement, and especially for the Rams, who have a lot of cap space. We're going to see what happens there.
Real quick, last question for you before we close out today. Again, two teams locally are on the opposite ends of the cap spectrum. As you just touched on, the Rams have a ton of space. The Chargers are way, way above the cap. Again, at least I would expect one to two, probably two other stars to get moved. What do you expect from the Rams, and what do you expect the Chargers to do here?
I expect the Rams to dive into their pockets again. They didn't have the opportunity to do so last year, and I think that's what they saved up for this year. They have the ability to get some really good defenders. There's a lot of safeties on the market. There's a lot of corners on the market. That's what they need. If you're going to spend money, go get one of those guys. For the offensive line, you can draft that way. For the Chargers, I know they don't have a lot of cap space, but just signings around the edge, I feel like, would be very helpful for them. Maybe get a tight end, maybe get another linebacker, maybe get somebody out there. And I know that there's a lot of talk about Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack. If you can move off of those guys and get more cap space from that, you know, they have a lot of options. And especially with John Harbaugh back in there. And they're going to have a lot of players to kind of sift through. I don't expect them to be very active in free agency. I expect them to be more active in the draft. But this team, the Chargers, this is a win now situation, I think, from here on out in this Harbaugh era. So for them, I don't think it's going to be more in free agency. I think it's going to be more draft. And for the Rams, I think it's flip-flopped. They're going to go after a lot of guys in free agency. They do have a lot of draft picks, but I expect them to finally get back into their pockets and spend some money this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, the Rams played this so well. And again, they were very upfront with their fan base and saying, hey, here's where we're at. Here's our cap space. We're kind of going to kick the can down the road. They didn't do that. I mean, they were a competitive team. So, but I think the fan base appreciated the upfrontness. They appreciated that. But I mean, Sean McVay really showed what kind of a coach he is. And I think Snead obviously has a GM. So we'll look for them to make some big moves. Grant, you're the best. We will do it again this week. That's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.